Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann LaCoury. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLAW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLAW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annlacoury.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Hope you're having a great summer so far, a really great August as summer is flying by, and I've been on a bit of a rock and roll kick lately, revisiting some of the great bands and musicians I grew up listening to. Went to the Rush concert last week at Madison Square Garden and actually even replayed the interviews I did with the great guitarist Alex Lifeson, and so I'm having a lot of fun catching up with some of the people behind that incredible music. And I'm very excited to share my conversation with Simon Kirk, the legendary drummer and founding member of Bad Company. And before that, Free. And I want to thank Ira Kaufman for introducing me to Simon. Simon's great. I enjoyed my conversation with him so much. I mean, just think about all those iconic songs. All Right Now, Can't Get Enough, Feel Like Making Love, Shooting Star. Simon provided the beat for so much of the soundtrack of our lives. You know, when you think about those songs, and I mean, they're still hit tunes to me. I mean, they're just timeless songs. And, you know, the cool part, in addition to his incredible musical career, is that Simon is also a passionate golfer. So when you get two people together who love music, great stories, and golf, there is plenty to talk about. So we talk about his remarkable rock and roll journey, some great memories he shared from Bad Company and Free, and of course, his love affair with the game of golf. So Simon Kirk is coming up next right here on Talking Golf. But first, let's take a look at some of the top stories in golf from this past weekend. And I mean, there's so much going on. We'll start with LIV Golf. As last Wednesday, LIV Golf CEO Scott O'Neill announced that the league has secured funding with a new lead investor. They did not give too many details about who this lead investor is and how much will actually be invested in LIV, but they did say they also have strong interest from a dozen additional parties to perhaps serve as minority investors, and that a new organizational structure will make LIV Golf players majority equity holders starting in 2027. LIV Golf was set to end its season in Michigan, but that event was canceled, and the team championship will now be staged next week in Indianapolis. Joachim Niemann, he won the LIV Golf Tournament at Trump Bedminster in New Jersey. He went wire to wire for the win. It was his ninth individual victory on LIV, the most of any player. And at 16 under, he finished three shots ahead of Harold Varner III. Harold Varner III. I have not said his name in ages. Gosh, I haven't seen him play in ages. That's what happens with these LIV guys. You just don't get to watch him that much. But anyway, it was John Rahm who clinched the season-long individual title for the third straight year. John Rahm did not have his best week at Bidminster, finishing tied for 41 out of 56 players. But apparently, he'd already done enough throughout the season to secure the championship. Both President Trump and Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, they were there on Sunday, along with Gary Player. And what about LIV Golf's biggest star, Bryson DeChambeau? Well, Mark Canizzaro of the New York Post, whom you've heard many times on this Talking Golf show, he got an exclusive interview with Bryson DeChambeau at the LIV tournament in Bedminster. And some of the things that Bryson said that stuck with me from this article. Bryson said he sees the future of LIV working long term. He spoke at length about LIV successfully expanding the game globally and the good work the league is doing to grow the game internationally. He said he'd like to play events on both LIV and the PGA Tour, that it is not an either or mentality, And here's a quote that Mark ended his column with, and I'm sure it turned a lot of heads. In quotes, this is from Bryson. "There is not a golf fan on the planet who doesn't want to see me play a big tour event. And I get that." Then he went on to say, "I'd love to go play events that make sense, love to play golf, and love to play wherever they'll let me." But that one sentence, "There isn't a golf fan on the planet who doesn't want to see me play a big tour event, and I get that." Come on, Bryson, that is really being cocky, don't you think? I mean, I really like Bryson DeChambeau. I supported him in the past. I've been on his side on some things and, you know, not on his side on other issues. But he gets so wrapped up in making these stupid comments like that that doesn't do him any favors for sure. That's a really cocky comment. So whatever, Bryson. All right, let's move on to the PGA Tour. Michael Brennan came up big at the Wyndham Championship. Brennan, he caught fire. On Sunday, he had five straight birdies. He carded a 664. He finished 22 under, three shots ahead of Bo Hostler. Most importantly, Michael Brennan played his way into the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, he started the week at number 105. In the FedEx Cup standings, and his victory on Sunday moved him up to 47. Wow, talk about delivering when it matters most. He took home $1.53 million for the winner's check, and what a great week for Michael Brennan. For Bo Hostler, it must have been a devastating blow. I mean, he shot a 61 in the opening round. He held the lead through 36 holes. He was tied for the lead through 54 with Brennan. He needed to win the tournament to qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs, but it was not meant to be. He finished with a 67, not a bad final round score for sure, but not good enough to beat Michael Brennan. And Hostler ended up three shots back, runner-up. Jackson Koivun, the 21-year-old who won the 3M Open and only his third professional start on the PGA Tour, he finished the Wyndham Championship, tied for 29th. But he was able to hold on to the 70th spot, the very last spot in the FedEx Cup standings, to qualify for the playoffs on the number. So in needing just five starts on the PGA Tour to get enough points to qualify for the postseason, it actually ties Jackson Koivun with Tiger Woods for the fewest number of tournaments needed to play to qualify for the playoffs. So good for Jackson. Next up, the first leg of the playoffs, the FedEx St. Jude Championship. That's at TPC Southwind in Memphis, Tennessee. Rory McIlroy will be playing after skipping it last year. And, you know, Rory's won the FedEx Cup Championship three times. 50 players will advance from the St. Jude to the BMW Championship, which will be held at Bellerive Country Club outside of St. Louis. And then 30 from that BMW Championship will qualify to play in the tour-ending Tour Championship in Atlanta. Some top names who did not qualify for the 2026 FedEx Cup playoffs: Brooks Koepka, Keegan Bradley, Tony Finau, and Jason Day. And who could forget the name Asterisk Tally, the 17-year-old from California? She put on quite a performance at the U.S. Women's AM, dominating Anna Iwananga of Japan, 8-6. This was at the Honors Course in Tennessee. And Tally won it with her father on the bag. Her father normally watches from behind the ropes, so carrying the bag for nine rounds on the course was something he said he had to train for. But what a great win for the father-daughter duel. You know, I've seen her play several times in person, and she is incredible. Last year, she played in the Annika Invitational, which happened to be at a club that I'm a member of in Florida, Heathrow Country Club, and she won that one. And then this past April, I had the opportunity of watching her in the Augusta National Women's AM, and she held the lead heading into the final round. She was not able to close it out, but boy, I'm sure she learned so much from that experience. This two-time U.S. amateur champ has quite the future ahead of her. And the U.S. men's amateur takes place at historic Marion Golf Club outside of Philadelphia. Last year, Mason Howell, as you know, beat Jackson Harrington at Olympic Club in San Francisco. And Mason became the third youngest winner in U.S. amateur history. What a great historic venue, Marion, outside of Philly to host the U.S. Men's Am. The next LPGA Tour event is this week, actually, the Standard Portland Classic at Columbia Edgewater Country Club in Portland, Oregon. In other golf news, Lexi Thompson and her husband, Max Provost, are expecting their first child, a baby girl, in February 2027. She has played a part-time schedule recently and withdrew from a June event due to a hip injury. And it's uncertain whether she'll be on the U.S. Solheim Cup team coming up in September. She and Provost are in Florida, and they got married in March. So lots of things to look forward to for Lexi Thompson and her husband. Megha Gani makes her LPGA debut as a pro this week at the Standard Portland Classic with an exemption from winning the Inkster Award that recognizes the highest-ranked college golfer in her final year of eligibility. Megha Gani was a four-time All-American at Stanford, which won two NCAA titles when she was there, and she won the U.S. Women's Am last summer at Bandon Dunes. Megha Gani has been on this show a couple times, actually. She's delightful. I first met her when she was competing at the Augusta National Drive, Chip, and Putt Finals, and then in the Augusta National Women's Am. She's been at this a long time. The award that she won is named after Julie Inkster. Julie spent all 4 years at San Jose State. She became the first player to win three straight U.S. women's amateur titles and went on to win seven LPGA majors and the career Grand Slam. And of course, she is a Hall of Famer. Webb Simpson is officially joining the U.S. President's Cup team, which will compete at Medina Country Club from September 24th through the 27th. He has been named as the squad's third captain's assistant. The other captain's assistants are Jim Furyk and Keegan Bradley. Of course, team captain is Brant Snedeker, but you know Jim Furyk. He actually was the U.S. President's Cup captain in 2024, and he will be the U.S. Ryder Cup captain in 2027. And Keegan Bradley was the Ryder Cup captain in 2025. So they will serve alongside Webb Simpson as assistant captains, and there is one remaining slot available for Snedeker to fill. Coming up, we will visit with the legendary Simon Kirk of Bad Company, and before that, the band Free. Kirk grew up in the English countryside outside of London and left home when he was 18 years old to pursue his dream. Fast forward, Kirk and vocalist Paul Rodgers were founding members of the band Free, best known for its 1970 hit, All Right Now. And then in 1973, Kirk became a founding member of Bad Company, the original band consisting of vocalist Paul Rodgers, guitarist Mick Ralphs, bassist Boz Burrell, and drummer Simon Kirk, with hits including Can't Get Enough, Ready for Love, Bad Company, Moving On, and Seagull. Their follow-up album in 1975 included hits Good Lovin' Gone Bad, Feel Like Makin' Love, and Shooting Star. All those hits, and yet Bad Company was not inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame until last year. I talk about this and much more with the great Simon Kirk, who's also a passionate golfer and a really nice guy. Can't wait to share my conversation with the legendary Simon Kirk. And joining me now is one of rock's true legends, Simon Kirk. He is the co-founder and longtime drummer of two iconic bands, Free and Bad Company. His unmistakable groove helped define some of classic rock's greatest songs. All Right Now, Can't Get Enough, Feel Like Making Love, just to name a few. And beyond his extraordinary musical career, Simon Kirk is an avid golfer who understands the parallels between performing on stage and competing on the golf course. Hey, Simon.
Hi, Anne. Well, thank you for having me, love. It's great to be talking to you. Yeah.
First of all, you have the best name for a rock star, Simon Kirk. I love your name.
Yeah, well, it's kind of what I've been born with and I've carried for many, many years now.
So it's your
It's
original, name, right?
it's my only name. I mean, half of me is Scottish. My ancestors were from Scotland and the other half were from England. Although I found out part of me is German. I'm not sure what to make of that. You know, I had that DNA. But anyway, yes, I am English to the core.
I love that. Well, when did you first start playing the drums? Let's start from the very beginning.
Oh, I started banging around on books and tins on my little bed in England when I was 13, and I graduated to a little drum kit about a year later, which I bought myself. We were pretty poor, so I did it from mowing lawns, and I put together £18, which was not a lot of money even 60 years ago. And I bought a little drum kit, and then I graduated, listening to records and playing along with records, until I left home and went down to London to seek my fame and fortune, as it were. And then luckily I got a break, and the rest is a history, really.
And what was that break, Simon?
Well, the break was, and it's a good story. I tossed a coin. Because I lived a long way away from this particular club that I wanted to go and see this band called Black Cat Bones. They were a blues band, but it was a really long way on the subway, like a 45-minute. And I either had to stay in and write letters home, or I would go to this club. So I tossed a coin, and I went. Ended up going to this club where I saw this amazing guitarist with this little band, and I said, I think you're wonderful, but your drummer's not very good. He said, "Well, funny you should say that, but our drummer is leaving tonight and we're auditioning tomorrow for other drummers if you want to come along." So I went all the way back to my little apartment and then all the way back the next day, another 45 minutes, auditioned and got the job. And that was the beginning of Free. And we were together about 4 years. We had the big hit, All Right Now, and so on. And then we left, or rather, Free broke up. And then I formed forces with Paul Rodgers, and we formed Bad Company. And we went on to have a pretty good career, quite honestly.
Unbelievable career. I'm telling you, I love all most of the songs are just so familiar. They live forever. Even today, young people
Yeah,
know the hits from Bad Company for sure.
we
The
do. I mean,
music
that
lives on.
yes, it does.
Now, you share the stage with some of the greatest musicians in rock history. And I often ask top golfers, like, what qualities separate truly great golfers from everyone else? So let me ask you from a musical standpoint, what qualities really separate, say, a great drummer from
Wow.
other drummers?
Honestly, I mean, if I were to pick one word out of the Ethernet, and it would be luck. Honestly, it's luck because there are drummers out there. I see on YouTube these little kids. I mean, these are incredible drummers. There are drummers, who play in little clubs who I walk in and I go, "Oh my God, this guy's incredible." I was lucky. I mean, and you make your own luck to a degree. And me going down to London and answering auditions, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I would say it's luck. It's not talent. Yeah, that's what I would say, luck.
Interesting. I was just going to say, based on your story, timing was everything.
Yeah.
You're lucky at that point.
Yeah. And,
Wow.
had that coin come down on the back of my hand, tails instead of heads, I wouldn't be talking to you now.
Wow. What a
Weird.
destiny. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
all about fate, right? It really is. Well, when did golf become an important part of your life?
Okay. So a good friend of mine was a drummer in a band called Traffic, which was an English band back in the
Sure.
late 60s and early 70s. Jim Capaldi was the drummer. Sadly, no longer with us, but he called me up one day and said, "Do you want to play some golf?" I said, "Jim, I never picked up a club in my life." He said, "Come on, you'll enjoy it." And he bullied me. And we went down to this beautiful little club just outside London. And he taught me, the grip and the stance. And of course, the first half an hour, I was all over the place spraying the ball. And then I hit this one shot. I'll never forget it. A 7 iron uphill about 140 yards. So it's playing about 160. And it landed that far from the pin. Boom. Talk about a lightning bolt. I thought, oh my God, that's it. And I was hooked from that moment on, just climbing up, to the green and seeing the ball. He's going, oh my God, oh my God. So that's when it all started. And
So
yeah, that was happening.
your approach shot landed less than a foot from the hole. Did you make the
No, I completely missed it.
putt?
Welcome to golf. You're a
Well,
king 1 minute and a clown the next.
and that's what brings everybody back, I would think, because you're so successful at your chosen profession, right?
Yeah.
And you see people like Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky and gosh, Derek Jeter, all these guys who are good golfers but they're not great golfers, but they excelled at their profession, obviously. They're superstars in their sport. So I guess a lot of very accomplished golf people in other fields love golf because you can't perfect it, right?
No, you cannot. Also, the other thing that I realized recently was it's the only game you can play by yourself. There's a certain loner quality to it. And I'm a bit of a loner, I'll be honest. I like riding my Harley and I can go out on the range or I can go out and if it's early on the course, I can just play 9 holes by myself, just getting my game, fluid. Yeah, I used to know a Mr. Tiger Woods rather well back in the day. We were on the same committee called First Tee, which helps kids, and we got talking and I said, how come you're so bloody good? I'm a bit cheeky when it comes to people like that. He knew me, he knew the band, and I actually sent his a kit for his Charlie when Charlie was a baby, because Tiger got me tickets for the Ryder Cup, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, how come you're so good? He said, well, I hit 1,000 balls a day with Butch, Harmon back in the day when Butch was his swing coach. Then I have some lunch. Then I do a 3 hour short game. Then I do an hour putting. Then I have a nap. Then I go back on the range. And I do that 5 days a week. Duh. So he said, the difference between you, who's at the time a 15 handicap, and me, is that we get into trouble. We hook off the tee, we slice off the tee, we'll go in the woods. But the difference between us and you is that we can get out of that trouble. I thought, ah, that's pretty good. If we got a 40-yard pitch shot, you'll probably blade it or chunk it. We will get it to within 3 feet and make the putt. And that's the difference. We're physically the same. We've got two arms and two legs, but it's between the ears where the difference is. And I never forgot that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he was being very humble because
He was being humble.
so many star golfers put in the same exact amount of time practice
No.
wise that he does, yet he was so far head and shoulders above so many of those other golfers, right?
Spectacular. I mean, his highlight reel or spectacular shots is head and shoulders above anyone. And I'm not denigrating Nicholas and Palmer and the greats and Sam Snead and so on. But Tiger's highlight reel, unbeatable. And then he goes and wins the Masters, 7 years ago. He came out of the doldrums and he's
Right.
just a special, special guy.
2019. Everybody thought it was over. Not Tiger. But you're right. He knows how to scramble too when he doesn't hit a good shot. They know where to miss the ball, right?
There you
And
go.
other parts of their game, if they're saying they're not putting well one day, they still can hit a, what I love about some of these guys like Scottie Scheffler. He's not playing his best golf and he's still winning tournaments usually. Not this season as much, but Just incredible talent for sure. Well, what do you bring, do you think, from your musical career to golf? Are there any similarities, any parallels?
I that's a good question, Anne. I think there's a certain dedication. I mean, apart from the fact that it gets, I don't drink and drug anymore. That's all in my rear view mirror. And that's one of the reasons that, when Alice Cooper years ago said, oh, I don't drink anymore, I play golf. So that's something waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning in a strange town, I just pick up the phone and go and play some golf. That's what I would do. So what there would be a certain dedication to playing. I'm not that good where I don't need to practice. So just getting out, get some motivation, go and hit the on the range for 30 or 45 minutes, and then go and play. And it's just you and the ball. It's you and the club and the ball. And there's no one else to blame anything on. So if you hit a shitty shot, that's you. It's no one else's fault. And there's a certain honor system that goes along with golf. And look, I'll put my hand up. When I was, starting the game, I cheated. I drop a ball. I do. Oh dear. And then I think, well, why? So you added an extra stroke on your scorecard. So there's a certain honesty, that goes along with being a golfer and playing golf properly, and that's something that I managed to incorporate in my life, and I meet some great people. I met some wonderful people playing golf, not just the pros, but everyday people. And by the end of 18 holes, you're friends, and it's a wonderful game.
Yeah, you mentioned a few things I'd like to look at more deeply. First of all, you said you're a loner, and when you're on the road, you can go out, and I love the range. I could be out on the range all day practicing. I love to practice. And then you can go out by yourself and have a perfectly great time. You don't even need other people. But if there are other people that, are in your twosome or foursome, whatever, and you don't even know them, by the end of 18 holes, you know them pretty well, which is amazing, right? So
I know. And
that camaraderie is special.
it's the only game where you champion your opponents. I mean, unless you're playing for hundreds of thousands of dollars, but if your playing partner or the other person in the other threesome hits a great shot, you go, yeah, man, great. Or they make a great putt, yeah. It's you feel for your playing partners, and I don't think there's another game like that where you can root for your opponent. Lovely.
That's right. That you're competing against, who you might have to give shots to.
Is that a
So,
gimme? Is that a gimme? No, go ahead.
you mentioned the honor system. Golf is really the only sport where you would call your own penalties on yourself. What
True.
other sport does that? No other sport that I can think
No.
of. So, and you said
No,
that, I thought that was interesting. You said that honor system has carried over to your life. Tell me more
no.
about that.
Well, like I said, back in the day when I was really, drinking a lot and drugging a lot and just being a terrible human being, I would go back or lie awake at night, unable to sleep for various substances. And I think, what are you doing to yourself? I was kind of a split personality, Anne. In that there was the sober me, the sensible me, and then the lunatic, which being a rock drummer in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I lived to the hilt. And I would have to look at myself in the mirror. There's no one else looking back. And so when I started playing golf, that honor slash honesty started permeating my personality, and it started to take root. And really, honesty, it's true what that old saying is. Honesty is the best quality in life. It is, because otherwise, you spend all your life putting out these fires that you started by telling a lie. And then you've got to keep that lie alive. And no, forget it. Life's
Right.
too short.
Life's too short, and that's way too complicated.
Yeah.
I love that lesson, though. That's a lesson I could include in my next book because, as I was mentioning, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf, all these golf legends talk about what they've learned from golf that they use in your day-to-day life. And you're talking
Yeah.
about the honor system, which I think is extraordinary.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
I love that. So, what about rhythm and tempo and the physical aspects of drumming? Any of that
Wow.
carry over to golf?
That's great. That's really good. Yeah, you'd think with my with my ability to play drums for over 60 years, I have a good, very, very good rhythm when I play drums. And it's something that sometimes deserts me on the course. Slow it down. One, two, three as you hit, one, two, breathing, this whole clear the brain, and just it's something that I talk a good swing. But it's something that I'm always looking on YouTube for tips and hints and Tiger said a great thing. He said, just go up to the ball, get the fundamentals, forget all the little stuff, and just hit it. Just turn away from the ball, hit the ball, and turn through it. Don't worry about this and that and this and that. It's true. I mean, there is probably six or seven fundamentals that every golfer should have when they hit a ball. But all this minutiae, this little tiny wrist angle, thumb angle, grip, strong, neutral, weak. Find what works for you and have a couple of lessons. Yeah. But don't go crazy with the lessons. It's all between the ears. Sam Snead said the toughest shot is the one with the toughest distance is the 6 inches between your ears.
I love that advice. Don't make it so complicated. Kind of clear your mind, let your athleticism take over and have confidence and just hit the damn ball, right? Sounds so easy, but let me ask you this. What has been more challenging for you learning the nuances of drumming when you were, first learning the skill or hitting a pure approach shot?
Well, I think if you're making a living from a certain activity, you want to be around a long time. You want it to be good. This is your profession. And my profession is drumming and writing songs and so on. So I work and I work and I work at that. Golf, number one, I just don't have the time to devote. My handicap now is hovering around 18, 20. And I just don't have the time or the wherewithal to bring it down to hopefully into the low teens. So right now I view golf as just a hobby and a pastime. I don't keep score anymore. I'm not a member of a club. I know friends of mine who are members of all the good clubs on Long Island, Shinnecock, Maidstone. I mean, very, very lucky. But I just treat it now as a passionate pastime, and I enjoy it so much better.
Right.
I've yet to pick up and say, "Fuck, excuse my French, but fuck this, let's go on to the next hole." I do hole out, and if it's a snowman, it's a snowman, and I just laugh it off. But I don't take it so seriously anymore. But I do love
That's
the game.
better.
It's
It's
better.
better. You have more fun that way. It won't drive you to drink.
No, maybe a large Perrier, and maybe
I love it, or some tea,
whiskey, cup of tea,
or
yes.
whiskey. Yeah, no more drinking. All right. So, do you have a favorite golf course in all the places you've been touring and?
Oh my Lord! Well, I mean, I played, luckily, played Pebble once. Honestly, there's a course in New Mexico, and I'm not denigrating any of the other wonderful. It was so beautiful. I was almost in tears. I was the only guy. It was very early in the day, just outside Santa Fe. I don't remember the name. It was beautiful. But if you want to ask me about, the big ones, I guess Shinnecock. Shinnecock's gorgeous. I've yet to break 90, not even, I don't think even 100. from Shinnecock, but it's the most spectacular, beautiful course. And National, which is next door to it. You know,
I love
National
National.
is, yeah, I mean, those two together, beautiful. Yeah.
I know you play in a lot of celebrity tournaments. You were at the St. Jude, well, the Patrick Warburton St. Jude
Yeah.
Celebrity Tournament in the desert in Florida. Our buddy Clark Rennie puts together some incredible golf tournaments
Yeah.
that include musical performances by people like
Right.
yourself in the evening, which, how fun is that for you? You can play golf during the day and perform at night.
Wonderful, wonderful combination. I mean, I got to play with some lovely people at the local TV station. They were so nice to me and gracious. But unfortunately, that was around where I kind of collapsed because it was so hot. You know, Englishmen don't really thrive above 75 degrees. This was in the high 90s. So by the turn, I was like, guys. But, you know, the saving grace was me being able to perform with this wonderful band, Six Wire from Nashville. And I did, you know, a couple of Bad Company songs. I did All Right Now and told a few stories. So it's a wonderful day of golf and then playing your favorite songs. And we raised, I believe, $3 or $4 million for kids. So it doesn't get any better than that, you know.
Yeah, Six Wire. They're
Yes.
very talented, by the way. How, so tell me some
Wonderful.
of the maybe some other musicians or some other stars like yourself whom you played with, who you've enjoyed hitting the ball with through the
You
years.
know, it's funny. I don't. I can only think of Mike from REM. I haven't really played. I mean, Alice, I ran into at another Alice Cooper at another pro-am last year, and he plays almost every day of his life because he lives in Arizona. I've yet to play with Alice. I believe he's scratch or he's like a one or a two. He's so good. But I'd love to say, yes, I played with so and so, but no, I haven't. I haven't played with many other musicians, sad to say.
Yeah, but you played with Tiger?
I didn't play with him. No,
No.
we met a few times on the board of First Tee and we got talking and he mentioned, you know, Charlie, who is now, you know, going to probably, I don't know if he'll go on tour. We'll see. But he was interested in drumming. But he was only 5 or 6, so I sent him a drum kit, and Tiger was very grateful. But I've yet to play. I'd love to play with Tiger. My God,
How fun would
there's
that
a
be?
great video of him with some people who obviously paid a fortune to play with him, and they have a long drive contest. And these three guys get up and they hit it. I don't know, 220, 230, and Tiger comes up and he gets on his knees and hits a 300-yard try on his
Tiger.
knees. Oh, man.
That's great. I love the fact that you two became friends and you sent Charlie a drum set. Charlie's
Yeah.
going to be a freshman at FSU. He's,
Wow.
gosh, what talent that kid has, and what an instructor growing up.
What an instructor. Yeah, my goodness.
So, as you
Yeah.
know, I was in Manhattan for the Rush concert. Alex
Yeah.
Lifeson, the Hall of Fame guitarist, is a huge golfer. Geddy Lee is not a
Oh.
golfer. Geddy Lee loves baseball. And then they have the drummer,
Hanukkah.
Annika Nills. Wow.
Yeah.
Was she extraordinary?
She's amazing. I mean, she came on the scene with Jeff Beck. I first became aware of her about 12 or 13 years ago when Jeff, who's always changing musicians, brought along this rather a pretty girl. I mean, I believe she's German. And,
Yes, she is.
you know, everyone's like, lady drummer, my goodness. And then she sat down behind the kit and just blew everyone away. I mean, she was so good. So she seemed like a natural replacement for dear Neil Peart, who's, you know, a wonderful drummer himself. And the fact that she now worked so well with Alex and Geddy, and Rush are just crushing it wherever they go. I mean, she put the crush in Rush. Does that make sense? You know what I mean.
I love
But I'm
that.
glad, they're doing it, and all power to them, and particularly to her. God bless her.
Really, because talk about pressure and tough shoes to fill. Did you know Neil at all?
No, I met him once or twice. We never really, my style of drumming is more like Ringo, simple and solid with feel. Neil was much more technical, prog rock, jazz rock. Wonderful drummer. I'm not knocking him at all, but it really wasn't my thing. But I certainly admired him tremendously. And plus he went through a lot of personal tragedies, and he just was a solid guy, man. He was a wonderful guy. God rest him. Yeah.
When you look back at your incredible career, Simon, I'm sure it's not a blur, even though you said you were heavy into the whole alcohol and the drug thing, but what do you take from all those years touring and the lifestyle? And it must have been so exciting. What a fantasy ride.
Wonderful, incredible. I mean, to set out, my parents gave me 2 years between 17 and 19. I graduated high school with some pretty good exam results, and then I was given 2 years. So I worked my way, and I found my niche, and I managed to set out to do what I wanted to do, but magnified hundreds of times. I mean, I was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. I got gold and platinum albums. I've got awards. Everything that I wanted to do, I set out to do, and I did it. And it was all down to a combination of luck, hard work, and luck. I mean, I cannot emphasize that more often. Plus, I work with some wonderful people. Paul Rodgers, one of the greatest singers of all time. I luckily to work with Mick Ralphs, wonderful guitar player. Paul Kossoff, another great guitar player. And I think what I brought out of that was nothing beats hard work. You've got to you can't expect things to fall in your lap. You've got to get up early. You've got to answer auditions. It's not going to fall in your lap out of the blue. Even today with the internet and the ability to write songs and send them all over the world in 2 minutes, you still got to get up with your guitar and write on a blank piece of paper. Nothing beats hard work.
Do you still write songs?
Yes, I do. In fact, I'm in the middle of writing a song right now, and I've written a rock musical about addiction called Rock Bottom, and we're in the process of doing fundraisers. So I wrote 14, 15 songs for that. That's kind of what I do now, Anne. I still drum. I do solo shows, and I do shows with friends. But my main thing now is songwriting and film music. I do film music.
That's
Yeah.
awesome. I remember when Roger Waters, who's also a golfer, wrote that
Yeah.
rock opera, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked on something after that, though, that he
Oh,
performed. I was
maybe
at a,
he did.
he
Yes.
did some kind of opera or some kind of just very unique from
Yeah.
what, we all know him from. But have you come in contact with Roger? I think he might even live
I
out
played
near
golf
your
with
way.
Roger a few, yeah, actually I did play golf with Roger a few years ago, and then he moved, and then I moved, and we kind of lost contact. But yeah, he's a pretty good golfer. Yeah, I played at National with him, and yeah, we had a good time together. Yeah.
He's a very serious golfer.
He's passionate, let's say passionate, Anne.
Very
I've never
passionate.
heard swear words like that come out of a human being's mouth, but let's put it like that. But he's good. I liked him.
So, what other projects are you working on now, Simon?
Well, this is the one that's taken up pretty much all of my time. I turned 77 a couple of days ago, and I got to, I got to face the fact that my playing days, my earning days being a drummer are probably diminishing. And that's okay. I've had a great run. I can now concentrate on songwriting, trying to be a good husband and father, and just enjoying my life, which is what I do now. Now that I'm sober, I have a good A clear conscience. A man can do anything with a clear conscience and a full belly.
I love that. How many years have you been sober?
I've had no drink for coming up on 12 years. I haven't done coke for 31 years. So, I've got a pretty good liver now.
Good for you. Now, after all these years, what did being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame mean to you personally, especially knowing what, Mick Ralphs and the band had been through?
Oh, well, I was relieved, and I don't want to appear, like sour grapes. Oh, we should have been inducted, I think, a long time ago, but I'm not going to dwell on that. John Sykes, the chairman of the Hall of Fame, came up to me, during the ceremony and said, "I'm so glad you're in." But it wasn't down to me, quote. It was down to a whole committee. And there's a two-step process. You get nominated and then you get inducted. And several bands have been nominated but have yet to be inducted. We managed to do the two for one and get inducted and nominated and inducted on the same day. So I was happy. I felt that it was, I'm glad that Mick Ralphs got to know about it before he passed away, our guitar player. We informed him in his hospital bed that we'd been inducted, and he said, "Does that mean we get free hot dogs?" "What? Sorry, Mick? Okay. Yes, we get free hot dogs, Mick. Yes." Anyway,
Well, when I
so
saw that it was only 2025 that you got inducted, I was like, what?
yeah.
Why so long? And Rush experienced the same delay. I remember when Alex Lifeson went up to the podium during that Hall of Fame ceremony and he did that blah, blah, blah speech, remember, for 2 minutes. It was great.
Good for him.
All right. So, favorite foursome. If you could put together the
Oof.
best foursome in the world, could you play with anybody in on the planet that you'd like to play with? Who would it be?
Well, I'd have to include Tiger because he's, one of the greatest of all time, without a doubt. And who else? Oh, going back. I like Tommy Fleetwood.
Ah.
I'm a huge fan of Tommy Fleetwood because he seems so affable, and it's just something about him that the Irish guy, not McElroy. I mean, I love Rory, don't get me wrong, but Lowry. I love
Shane,
Lowry. What's his
right.
first name?
Shane,
Shane.
Shane.
Shane Lowry. And now you might want to look this name up, Jimmy Demeritt.
Yes, Jimmy Demerit. Americans pronounce it Demerit. Three-time Masters champion. He won back in 1940, 1947, and 1950.
But he had such a wonderful light-heartedness about playing. If he flubbed a shot or, yeah, don't worry about it. He was a hell of a golfer in his day. And if I could squeeze a fifth one, Lee Trevena. I love Lee. In
So
fact,
much fun.
it squeeze Lee and Jimmy Demeritt together, make a Lee Demeritt. Those would be my four people to play with. I've been not studying, but I've been an avid golfer for a long, long time, and I've read a lot of books about the history of the game. And it's a hell of a name. But yeah, I do know some of the great names back in the day. Yeah, Hogan, Snead, and so on. Walter
Have you?
Hagen.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I love there's a great story about Walter Hagen. He was about 140 yards. He was stymied by a pine tree. And listen to this. So he's got a pipe in his mouth, and he's got this pipe, and he takes out a 9 iron and he lofts this ball right over the pine tree. And he knows where it's going to land. And before it's even landed, he's walking and he's lighting his pipe. And sure enough, the ball is what, 3 feet from the pin. I love it. Love those guys. Anyway.
Oh man. So do you play any of the courses or in, on the northwest coast of England? There's just so many great links courses there. Have you been there?
I've only played St Andrews when I was touring there a long time ago, and the old course was closed because it was the Sabbath. It's not open on the Sunday. That's when the course is turned over to the local people, and they can walk with their strollers and just walk all over the course. And that old course is 600 years old. They said, well, you can play the new course. I go, oh, wow, there's a new course. He said, yeah, this is only 300 years old. Oh, okay. So I played that.
I love it. Simon Kirk, Hall of Fame drummer, Bad Company, passionate golfer, songwriter. What a delight. Let's play some golf sometime.
Let's do that, Anne. I'd love to squire you around your favorite 18.
We'll bring over to Southampton Golf Club, which you've played,
Oh,
I'm sure.
I play one time. It's very, very nice.
Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Anne. Anytime.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with the great Simon Kirk. All right, let me tell you about my book, Life on the Green: Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. If you have not picked up a copy of this book, you should. The lessons shared in this book by 12 golfing legends, six men and six women, they transcend golf. They transcend sports. They are actually lessons and wisdom to use every day. You have Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Ben Crenshaw, Gary Player, Padraig Harrington, Bernhard Langer, Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Jan Stevenson, Amy Alcott, Dottie Pepper, Renee Powell. And what's interesting is all 12 of these golf legends thanked me for including them in this collection. And they all were so willing to share their wisdom and their advice and great anecdotes from their Hall of Fame careers. I mean, every one of these personalities has accomplished so much in golf, but the book is not only about what they, you know, what about their great careers, but it's also about life lessons that they learn from the game. You know, golf is certainly a metaphor for life. That's why you hear me talking and interviewing to all different kinds of personalities, whether they're professional golfers or sports stars or, you know, a drummer, you know, from Bad Company like Simon Kurt, or last week's show, Alex Lifeson, the guitarist for Rush. They all love golf because they all find it very challenging. And you'll find in Simon's interview in this show that he gets so much from golf that he uses in his day-to-day life and that helps him in his day-to-day life, which I just thought Simon was so open and so honest about his sobriety and about his career and his journey. And he was just so candid and so refreshing. So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Simon Kirk of Bad Company, and I hope you buy my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. Thanks to Simon, thanks to Ira Kaufman, and to Mike Goodsell in production. Remember, as Walt Disney once said, all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. Have a great week, and I look forward to visiting with you again next time right here on Sports Interview with Anne Laborie.